Recyclical, making lithium ion last forever. Recyclical's patented recycling process achieves up to 100% recovery of battery metals from lithium ion batteries for electric vehicles, including cobalt, lithium, nickel, manganese, and aluminum. Recyclical Battery Materials Incorporated trades on the TSX Venture AMY, on the OTCQB AMYZF, and Frankfurt ID4. For more information, visit recyclico.com or phone us at 778-574-4444. Recyclico, making lithium ion last forever.
You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at talkdigitalnetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Rick Ackerman, editor of the newsletter Rick's Picks, his website rickackerman.com. He's speaking to us today from the Minds and Money Show in Miami. Welcome back to the show, Rick.
Always a pleasure, Jim. I appreciate your inviting me on.
Rick, the Minds and Money Show, usually quite busy. How busy is it this year?
Well, I'd say we're down about half from last year attendance-wise. This is a show where exploration companies, the gold, silver, lithium, whatever, are here to raise money. And it's been a good show in the past, and I think it'll be a good show somewhere down the road, but there's definitely a very subdued climate this year.
What does the attendance tell you?
Well, there's either, I think that the people in the industry feel that their prospects of raising money right now are not particularly good. And of course, if you've been hanging on to one of the juniors, these exploration stocks for a while, you'll know why.
Now, if they feel the prospects aren't good, does that mean you have to work harder to get it and you should be there?
Well, I think it's more the latter. You really have to, some companies need to maintain a presence, if for no other reason than to let the world of capital know that they're still alive. But, you know, I'm looking at some of the charts for companies that are here. $2 just as recently as mid-2022, and they're trading down in 50, 60 cents. There's another company here that has been falling from 40, 50, 60 cents. They're down around 10 cents a share, and I don't know whether to give them the bad news or not, because I can see on a chart that it's not going to bottom until it comes down to around 7.2 cents. So if that's any indication, these stocks still have a ways to go before they hit bottom, which is, that's tough news.
And I saw a mining company here in Canada was shutting down three of its mines. Who doesn't want gold?
Well, for one, a lot of these Bitcoin wackos, you know, you see straightforward deals. You know, I'll change my I'll take Bitcoin any day for gold, but I think they're sort of on the wrong track there.
Yeah, I just described Bitcoin to my wife as the Seinfeld of investing. It's about nothing. It's what's behind it.
Oh, it really is. There's nothing behind it, and you know, I know I'm not hallucinating or even sour grapes. It's just something that's worthless. It's we've done that. You and I have done the calculation before, and Bitcoin does have a value to the extent that it's the technology itself is useful for recording transactions in a very secure way. Not completely secure, by the way. We've seen a lot of hacks in Bitcoin with scoundrels getting away with, in some cases, tens of millions or even hundreds of millions of dollars worth of this this supposedly secure store of value. So, so in any case, if there was a value for Bitcoin, it was that it was the technology, the blockchain, was useful for securely recording transactions. But if you assign a value to Bitcoin based on its transactional usefulness, then it would be, I would say, in the area of maybe a buck and a half to $2 or $3, certainly not $70,000, but it would be, in order to keep it competitive with other media that we use to exchange money, including credit cards, you'd need to value Bitcoin down around the $1 or $2 level. And of course, Bitcoin has never really been about, it's never been used much for transactions. It's a speculative medium that recalls that old joke about, these aren't eating sardines, these are trading sardines. So nobody really eats Bitcoin or uses it to eat or buy coffee. They just use it to speculate. So that's just one more strike against a medium which really has no intrinsic value whatsoever. And as near as I can make it out, the main value comes from scarcity. The original mintage of Bitcoin, I think, was 21 million. So up to beyond that, there's no Bitcoin. So yes, you can make the scarcity argument, but if you tick off the rest of the bullet points, what makes something money? Bitcoin doesn't really qualify in any sense of the word.
The service fees to use Bitcoin, outrageous, $45-$50 to make a transaction.
Yeah, and that would tend to give it negative value. You know, I was being generous to say that Bitcoin should be worth $2 or $3 rather than $70,000, which seems to be where it's headed again. But I think that the big players are making a very cynical calculation that this will be a good opportunity to sell out, to essentially unload into an unwary public.
We'll have more with Rick Ackerman right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Rick Ackerman, and getting back to the Minds and Money show, they want us to drive electric cars, which require a tremendous amount of investment in, say, copper. An EV uses 83 kilograms, 183 pounds of copper. That's 277% more than your regular vehicle uses in copper. And yet copper prices are depressed. We're going to need more of these rare minerals and just standard minerals for all the cell phones and computers we use. And yet people aren't investing in the materials to make those. Why is that?
Hard to say. They really are investing in them. It's just a question of how aggressively. But the story has turned south on EVs. You know, they've had such horrible press. It's not only just that we're strip mining the world to come up with the ingredients for the battery storage for EVs, but we've had a tough winter, you know, where cars were lined up to get charged. And it turns out, I had a friend tell me he got to Enterprise Car Rentals, and they didn't have anything to give him except one of those Leafs. It's who makes it? Nissan maybe?
Yeah.
Or all right, so they were going to lease him a Leaf, and it showed, I think, 100 miles on the meter. He had a charge that would take him about 100 miles, but he only got 20 miles in the very cold weather, and that was it. He couldn't go any further, and it took him to get a full charge on the car again in the cold. It took him 36 hours. So I'm not quite sure the feedback loop of the counter public relations loop said, well, you know, Sweden, they know all about that. They've been dealing with cold weather and electrical cars for a while, and they just keep them warm overnight and this and that. And another part of the deflection story was that we simply don't have enough charging stations yet. But that's certainly a problem now, because you get in line in the Chicago weather. It's 10 degrees, and of course you're running down your battery because the temperature is it's cold, so you've got the heat on full blast and so on and so forth. So we're in sort of an EV crisis, and then it looks like only Toyota is sort of retrovisionary enough to see that maybe electric vehicles ought not be your all-in bet. for the future of the automobile. So Toyota is actually doubling down on its production of internal combustion engines, cars run on normal gasoline or even diesel fuel. So that may put Toyota in good stead, because all the other car makers are, I think, looking out 5-6 years, they are effectively making all-in bets on electric vehicles.
Yeah, now another thing, too, it really depends on the kind of driving you do. Electric vehicles, in terms of efficiency, are good to 60 kilometers, 40 miles an hour. After that, gasoline-powered vehicles are much more energy efficient. So if you do a lot of highway driving, an electric car probably isn't the product for you. And I don't think governments that have been mandating that by a certain year the only thing you can buy is an EV have taken that into consideration. But since when have politicians really taken the future or practicality into consideration in their decisions?
Well, the sure sign that a decision is going to be disastrous is when it becomes a mandated decision, you know, and we decide no more gas stoves for anybody and no more internal combustion engine cars, then we know we're headed toward disaster. So if you get any 10 politicians together in some committee that decides on these rules, you know that's where we're headed.
Yes, and where natural gas is now considered to be evil, this only came up the last few years. Before, there was a big push to convert gasoline cars to natural gas. I know I drove a natural gas-powered police car to prove it was just as powerful as a gasoline-powered one, and yes, it is. And yes, I beat the RCMP high-speed instructor going through the obstacle course in an electric police car. Was I lucky or was he bad? I don't know.
Well, 20 years ago, the clean, natural gas-burning car was really on the dream horizon. And here we are with all the natural gas we need to provide that clean power, clean energy. And, of course, nobody wants it anymore. And the alternative, let's say nuclear generation of power, is certainly not being embraced. More like shunned, and you've got some lost leaders out there, like Germany, deciding in some state of craziness that they were going to abandon nukes. And of course, France has been, I guess, under maintaining its own nuclear capacity. So I'm not quite sure whether that was political or budgetary, but France was considered probably the leading sovereign entity on the planet as far as producing energy from nuclear fission. So we're headed in the wrong direction, and there's no way, when you look at the energy pie, like where do we get our energy from, there's no way that even if everybody were radically in favor of going toward wind stations or whatever, or even nuclear, there's no way we can shift the allocation that much to make much of a difference.
In British Columbia, we rely on hydroelectric power, but they're predicting a drought again for this summer and a low snowpack for the winter. Where are we going to get this future hydropower from?
I would say they better start blowing a lot of artificial snow or something. I don't know. The hydroelectric problem is very serious, because it seems to suggest there are long-term global changes. I'm never in favor of giving hundreds of trillions of dollars to Belgium so that they can produce better weather, even if you believe that that there's a warming trend that's man caused. But I'm not quite sure. The drought problem has implications beyond Canadian hydroelectric. And you're going to see it in the Southwest in the form of, a problem with growing basic foods.
Yeah, and L.A. getting more than their fair share of rain right now, just like they did last year. But they don't have a system to capture this excess rain and store it up to put on their water-starved crops. Is this a matter of poor planning again?
Well, it was partly growing the wrong crops in the wrong places. You know, they've got lettuce farms in places where the rainfall is under, it's under some critical threshold. And of course, California at the heart of it is just one huge water problem.
Yeah, California naturally gets enough water for about 3 million people, and they have over 40.
Well, I think if you just watch Chinatown, it's a good film to kind of get the lay of the land, literally, as far as the beginnings of California's water problem. But on the good side, more people are moving out of California, so maybe it could make a difference.
Yeah, about 100,000 a year are moving out. Whereas in British Columbia, we have about 100,000 a year moving in. So for us, the power crunch, we barely made enough power last year. We had to import it at some points, and yet we're supposed to have this huge hydro resource backing the province when we don't. On the other hand, British Columbia has over a 200-year proven reserve of natural gas, and the governments are turning the taps off.
Yeah, that doesn't... I mean, Canada's government is becoming notorious for doing the wrong thing. And that sounds like it's it's a natural.
Well, we had the environment minister address a conference in Quebec in French, so the English media wouldn't pick it up, that the federal government was going to stop funding highways, and they later rescinded it. But here in the Lower Mainland, again, 100,000 people a year move to British Columbia, so that's a mid-sized city. And the traffic congestion in this area is unbelievable, especially into the Fraser Valley, where it's stop-go for 20, 30, 40, 50 miles every day. And it's not being addressed because cars are evil.
What happened to Canada, by the way? I mean, I used to think, growing up, Canada seemed like a very sane place to live, and its distinction was that everything cost a little bit more in Canada because we were pricing it in U.S. dollars. But where do you think Canada went off the rails?
Well, this obsession with climate change, and I saw two studies now that said the country that will benefit the most from a changing climate is Canada, because it won't be so cold in the winter, which saves you on heating. But we have governments that have decided that fossil fuels, no matter what they're used for, are evil. And Canada itself accounts for less than 2% of the world's so-called greenhouse gases. So if every Canadian stopped using any form of energy whatsoever, we would have virtually no impact whatsoever as well. So we are paying a lot, but it's not going to make any difference. It also belies the fact that the biggest factors in climate change are changes in the Earth's orbit, solar activity, asteroid hits, and volcanoes, and none of those are controlled by carbon taxes and getting rid of fossil fuels.
Well, that's true. I think you talk with Bob Hoy occasionally, and he's made a pretty good case for solar cycle and as being much more significant for climate cycles in this world than fossil fuels. So, but one thing Canada has going for it is that you're perceived by us and everybody else in the world as very unthreatening. So it gives you, I think, a chance to start with a clean slate wherever that might leave the rest of us.
What should we be watching for on the stock markets right now?
$430.58 on Microsoft. You know, I hung that figure out half a year ago, and it kept me bullish as long as Microsoft was making its way up to that target. But I still think we are right. I know I've been saying this for 30 years, but I think we're right on the edge here. The market, you've heard the business about the wall of worry, how the market climbs a wall of worry. But I want to submit that the wall of worry concept is really just a little bit screwy. The idea is that the big fortunes have been made being in the market when people were too scared, and somehow the investments were justified down the road, that the market in its infinite wisdom and prescience was just seeing better times ahead. But I would say that that's got it completely wrong, and what is we call war worry is really a mass psychosis where the market is going, it's going to go up no matter what. And right now it's going up in a way that's oblivious to so many things. It's oblivious to the, well, for starters, the bull twaddle statistics that say the economy is strong. It's not. You know, you look at Silicon Valley layoffs and the whole implosion of the retail sector and everything else. The only thing that's strong is markets where assets are getting inflated. And of course, government hiring, that's where the jobs are coming from, the non-productive sector. But beyond that, if I needed more proof that the market is in a psychotic episode right now, it's been obsessed with Fed loosening, tightening Fed policy now for decades. So here we have the worst nightmare, which is that coming into the new year, we had the usual blathering idiot talking head saying the market has priced in seven decreases in rates. You know, let's say that's maybe 2 percentage points, 175 basis points. So not only are we not getting that, I think you could make a pretty good argument that the next thing that the Fed's going to do is going to tighten, because we're not having an abatement of inflation. And even Wall Street now is getting into the idea that the stats, hey, these stats that say the economy is so strong, they're all wrong. It's really weak. So Wall Street is actually on the right factual side, even though for the wrong sort of lying, cheating, stealing reasons. So all right. So the market has taken off so much right now, including the fact that we're going to get tightening, and it continues not only to move up, but to move up in such lunatic fashion. I refer to the Magnificent Seven I've been referring to them as the lunatic stocks for the last 5 years. But any direction you look at for something to support the outrageous, the vertical moves that a lot of these stocks are making, and more focus, fewer stocks are making these huge moves. But we know in the case of Facebook that one overnighter, a short squeeze leap into the void, can add as much as $200 billion to the economy. So it's really crazy money, and I think we're really at the very tail end of it. We're today with the big move in Nvidia, we have I think a blow off short squeeze. So we're right there now.
Well, if you want a boost to your local economy, convince Taylor Swift to hold a concert there, because she can bring $7 to $30 million to your town.
Yeah, don't get me started on Taylor Swift. I referred to Nvidia the other day as the Taylor Swift of stocks.
Well, at least she makes good music, which is better than Bitcoin. It doesn't make anything.
Not my kind of music, I'd have to say.
Well, it'll never be the Eagles.
Or anybody else. But I guess if you're, you know, a 16-year-old teenage girl, I guess it's your kind of music.
Well, our
anyway,
parents.
Yeah,
knocked,
the Taylor's,
I was going to say our parents knocked the Beatles. The older generation
always hates
the younger generation's music.
You remember the statement John Lennon made that was somewhat controversial? He said, "We're more popular than Jesus now." But what can you say about Taylor Swift, who is more popular than the Beatles were?
Well, at least she's generous with her money, giving it to shooting victims and to her truck drivers. $100,000 bonuses to her truck drivers, and the other people worked on her tour got massive bonuses as well, which I don't see other performers doing.
Well, I think relative to what she's making, that's equivalent to the dollar that I gave one of those toll takers at the I-95 exit I took for Miami this morning. I gave him $1 thinking I carry $2 bills for this purpose, because they really can't buy much for a one anymore, but I didn't have any twos. So anyway, she may appear to be generous, but compared to the zillion she's making, she's sort of throwing peanuts out there for public relations value.
Yeah, and one of the complaints people have about her is her marketing, is that she'll put just one different song on a certain album, and people who want a complete collection have to buy that album. So four albums to get four new songs. Other bands have just put out a whole complete album with all new songs.
Well, that trend is global, actually. It's been developing for a while, and I noticed it last night. I'm a movie buff, and I was looking at movie titles, things I'd like to see, and they've divvied up movie titles so that you can't see anything without paying for it. And if you go to Amazon Prime and look at their movies, they no longer give away good stuff for free. You got to buy it. But even more perniciously, they make you take a trial subscription to some streaming service that not only you haven't heard about, but nobody even knows what it is. And you've got to stream this service for a trial month just to see one stupid movie. So they've got it all divvied up so that that you can't access any movie that you actually want to see is not available unless you pay up.
Rick, anything else we should be keeping a close eye on right now?
Just Microsoft, 430 on the weekly chart, maybe 437. The stock's currently... It made a lunatic leap this morning of, I think, $7, $8, and it's trading around $4.10. It did trade as high as $420 a share a couple weeks ago, came down into the 390s, but I think you don't really have to complicate it more than that. When Microsoft tops, the bull market is over, and I think Microsoft is very close to that.
Rick, thank you so much for chatting with us.
And thank you, Jim. It's always a pleasure.
My guest has been Rick Ackerman, editor of the newsletter Rick's Picks. His website, rickackerman.com. He was speaking to us from the Minds and Money Show in Miami. If you have any questions for Rick or for any of our guests, you can send them to info@howstreet.com. We'll ask that question for you. Our YouTube channel is Talk Digital Network. Find us on X at How Street. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. HowStreet.com radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.